Chapter 73. More birds of prey, Rogue Rider Hood dwelt deep and dark in Limehouse Hole, among the riggers, and the mast, oar and block makers, and the boat builders, and the sail lofts, as in a kind of ship's hold stored full of waterside characters, some no better than himself, some very much better, and none much worse. The whole, albeit in a general way, not over nice in its choice of company, was rather shy in reference to the honor of cultivating the rogue's acquaintance, more frequently giving him the cold shoulder than the warm hand, and seldom or never drinking with him, unless at his own expense. A part of the whole, indeed, contained so much public spirit and private virtue, that not even this strong leverage could move it to good fellowship with a tainted accuser. But, there may have been the drawback on this magnanimous morality, that its exponents held a true witness before justice, to be the next unneighborly, and accursed character to a false one. Had it not been for the daughter whom he often mentioned, Mr. Riderhood might have found the whole a mere grave, as to any means it would yield him of getting a living. But Miss Pleasant Riderhood had some little position and connection in Limehouse Hole. Upon the smallest of small scales, she was an unlicensed pawnbroker, keeping what was popularly called a leaving shop, by lending insignificant sums on insignificant articles of property deposited with her as security. In her 24th year of life, Pleasant was already in her 5th year of this way of trade. Her deceased mother had established the business, and on that parent's demise she had appropriated a secret capital of 15 shillings to establishing herself in it, the existence of such capital in a pillow, being the last intelligible confidential communication made to her by the departed, before succumbing to dropsical conditions of snuff and gin, incompatible equally with coherence and existence. Why christened Pleasant, the late Mrs. Riderhood might possibly have been at some time able to explain, and possibly not. Her daughter had no information on that point. Pleasant she found herself, and she couldn't help it. She had not been consulted on the question, any more than on the question of her coming into these terrestrial parts, to want a name. Similarly, she found herself possessed of what is colloquially termed a swivel eye derived from her father, which she might perhaps have declined, if her sentiments on the subject had been taken. She was not otherwise positively ill-looking, though anxious, meager, of a muddy complexion, and looking as old again as she really was. As some dogs have it in the blood, or are trained, to worry certain creatures to a certain point, so not to make the comparison disrespectfully Pleasant Riderhood had it in the blood, or had been trained, to regard seamen, within certain limits, as her prey. Show her a man in a blue jacket, and, figuratively speaking, she pinned him instantly. Yet, all things considered, she was not of an evil mind or an unkindly disposition. For, observe how many things were to be considered according to her own unfortunate experience. Show Pleasant Riderhood a wedding in the street, and she only saw two people taking out a regular license to quarrel and fight. Show her a christening, and she saw a little heathen personage having a quite superfluous name bestowed upon it, inasmuch as it would be commonly addressed by some abusive epithet, which little personage was not in the least wanted by anybody, and would be shoved and banged out of everybody's way, until it should grow big enough to shove and bang. Show her a funeral, and she saw an unremunerative ceremony in the nature of a black masquerade, conferring a temporary gentility on the performers, at an immense expense, and representing the only formal party ever given by the deceased. Show her a live father, and she saw but a duplicate of her own father, who from her infancy had been taken with fits, and starts of discharging his duty to her, which duty was always incorporated in the form of a fist or a leathern strap, and being discharged hurt her. All things considered, therefore, Pleasant Riderhood was not so very, very bad. There was even a touch of romance in her, of such romance as could creep into Limehouse Hole, and maybe sometimes of a summer evening, when she stood with folded arms at her shop door, looking from the reeking street to the sky, where the sun was setting, she may have had some vaporous visions of far-off islands in the southern seas or elsewhere, not being geographically particular, where it would be good to roam with a congenial partner among groves of breadfruit, waiting for ships to be wafted from the hollow ports of civilization. For sailors to be got the better of were essential to Miss Pleasant's Eden. Not on a summer evening did she come to her little shop door, when a certain man standing over against the house on the opposite side of the street took notice of her. That was on a cold, shrewd, windy evening, after dark. Pleasant Riderhood shared with most of the lady inhabitants of the hole the peculiarity that her hair was a ragged knot, constantly coming down behind, and that she never could enter upon any undertaking without first twisting it into place. At that particular moment, being newly come to the threshold, to take a look out of doors, she was winding herself up with both hands after this fashion. And so prevalent was the fashion, that on the occasion of a fight, or other disturbance in the hole, the ladies would be seen flocking from all quarters universally twisting their back hair as they came along, and many of them, in the hurry of the moment, carrying their back combs in their mouths. It was a wretched little shop, with a roof, that any man standing in it could touch with his hand, little better than a cellar or cave, down three steps. Yet in its ill-lighted window, among a flaring handkerchief or two, an old peacoat or so, a few valueless watches and compasses, a jar of tobacco and two crossed pipes, a bottle of walnut ketchup, and some horrible sweets, these creature discomforts serving as a blind to the main business of the leaving shop, was displayed the inscription Seaman's Boarding House. Taking notice of Pleasant Riderhood at the door, the man crossed so quickly that she was still winding herself up when he stood close before her. "Is your father at home?" said he. "I think he is," returned Pleasant, dropping her arms. "Come in." It was a tentative reply, the man having a seafaring appearance. Her father was not at home, and Pleasant knew it. "Take a seat by the fire," were her hospitable words, when she had got him in. "Men of your calling are always welcome here." Said the man. His manner was the manner of a sailor, and his hands were the hands of a sailor, except that they were smooth. Pleasant had an eye for sailors, and she noticed the unused color and texture of the hands, sunburnt though they were, as sharply as she noticed their unmistakable looseness and suppleness, as he sat himself down with his left arm carelessly thrown across his left leg a little above the knee, and the right arm as carelessly thrown over the elbow of the wooden chair, with the hand curved, half open and half shut, as if it had just let go a rope. "Might you be looking for a boarding house?" Pleasant inquired, taking her observant stand on one side of the fire. "I don't rightly know my plans yet," returned the man. "You ain't looking for a leaving shop?" said the man. "No," assented Pleasant, "you've got too much of an outfit on you for that. But if you should want either, this is both." Said the man, glancing round the place. "I know. I've been here before." "Did you leave anything when you were here before?" Asked Pleasant, with a view to principle and interest. "No." The man shook his head. "I am pretty sure you never boarded here?" "No." The man again shook his head. "What did you do here when you were here before?" Asked Pleasant. "For I don't remember you." "It's not at all likely you should. I only stood at the door one night on the lower step there while a shipmate of mine looked in to speak to your father. I remember the place well." Looking very curiously round it. "Might that have been long ago?" A goodish bit ago. When I came off my last voyage. Then you have not been to sea lately? No. Been in the sick bay since then, and been employed ashore. Then, to be sure, that accounts for your hands. The man with a keen look, a quick smile, and a change of manner, caught her up. You're a good observer. Yes. That accounts for my hands. Pleasant was somewhat disquieted by his look, and returned it suspiciously. Not only was his change of manner, though very sudden, quite collected, but his former manner, which he resumed, had a certain suppressed confidence and sense of power in it that were half threatening. Will your father be long? He inquired. I don't know. I can't say. As you supposed he was at home, it would seem that he has just gone out. How's that? I supposed he had come home, Pleasant explained. Oh, you supposed he had come home? Then he has been some time out? How's that? I don't want to deceive you. Father's on the river in his boat. At the old work? Asked the man. I don't know what you mean, said Pleasant, shrinking a step back. What on earth do you want? I don't want to hurt your father. I don't want to say I might, if I chose. I want to speak to him. Not much in that, is there? There shall be no secrets from you. You shall be by. And plainly, Miss Riderhood, there's nothing to be got out of me, or made of me. I am not good for the leaving shop, I am not good for the boarding house, I am not good for anything in your way to the extent of sixpenn'orth of halfpence. Put the idea aside, and we shall get on together. But you're a seafaring man? Argued Pleasant, as if that were a sufficient reason for his being good for something in her way. Yes and no. I have been, and I may be again. But I am not for you. Won't you take my word for it? The conversation had arrived at a crisis, to justify Miss Pleasant's hair in tumbling down. It tumbled down accordingly, and she twisted it up, looking from under her bent forehead at the man. And taking stock of his familiarly worn rough-weather nautical clothes, piece by piece, she took stock of a formidable knife in a sheath at his waist ready to his hand, and of a whistle hanging round his neck, and of a short jagged knotted club with a loaded head, that peeped out of a pocket of his loose outer jacket or frock. He sat quietly looking at her. But, with these appendages partially revealing themselves, and with a quantity of bristling oakum-colored head and whisker, he had a formidable appearance. Won't you take my word for it? He asked again. Pleasant answered with a short dumb nod. He rejoined with another short dumb nod. Then he got up and stood with his arms folded, in front of the fire, looking down into it occasionally, as she stood with her arms folded, leaning against the side of the chimney piece. To while away the time till your father comes, he said, pray is there much robbing and murdering of seamen about the waterside now? No, said Pleasant. Any? Complaints of that sort are sometimes made, about Ratcliffe and Wapping, and up that way. But who knows how many are true? To be sure. And it don't seem necessary. That's what I say, observed Pleasant. Where's the reason for it? Bless the sailors, it ain't as if they ever could keep what they have, without it. You're right. Their money may be soon got out of them, without violence, said the man. Of course it may, said Pleasant, and then they ship again and get more. And the best thing for 'em to ship again, as soon as ever they can be brought to it. They're never so well off as when they're afloat. I'll tell you why I ask, pursued the visitor, looking up from the fire. I was once beset that way myself, and left for dead. apostrophe, no, apostrophe, apostrophe, said Pleasant. Where did it happen? Apostrophe, it happened, apostrophe, returned the man, with a ruminative air, as he drew his right hand across his chin, and dipped the other in the pocket of his rough outer coat. It happened somewhere about here, as I reckon. I don't think it can have been a mile from here. Apostrophe, were you drunk? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Pleasant. I was muddled, but not with fair drinking. I had not been drinking, you understand. A mouthful did it. Apostrophe, Pleasant with a grave look shook her head, importing that she understood the process, but decidedly disapproved. Fair trade is one thing, apostrophe, said she, but that's another. No one has a right to carry on with Jack in that way. Apostrophe, the sentiment does you credit, apostrophe, returned the man, with a grim smile, and added, in a mutter, the more so, as I believe it's not your father's. Yes, I had a bad time of it, that time. I lost everything, and had a sharp struggle for my life, weak as I was. Apostrophe, did you get the parties punished? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Pleasant. A tremendous punishment followed, apostrophe, said the man, more seriously, but it was not of my bringing about. Apostrophe, of whose, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Pleasant. The man pointed upward with his forefinger, and, slowly recovering that hand, settled his chin in it again as he looked at the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.